Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show.
The third culture kid thing that a lot of people talk about, and especially everyone that went to school with us, so anyone that went to an international school overseas. And I had grown up, although my mother is from Singapore, my father is German. So I started going to the German school until I was about 11 or 12. And from there, I switched to an international school. So there was very little socializing with local Singaporeans. So the first culture shock came when I had to do military service and found myself surrounded by people that were the essence of a country that I grew up in my entire life, but never knew at all. That was definitely the main thing. Then after that, obviously going to international school, you meet so many different children from different walks of life. Everyone gets along well. It's sort of this wonderful bubble where everyone is okay and everyone gets along. In our school, it was a particularly very, very diverse culturally. And it was the whole philosophy of the school was about embracing different cultures. So when I moved to the US for university, I was kind of expecting life to be the same. And when I got there, I realized that it wasn't like that at all.
Hi, it's great to have you on Your Career Podcast. I'm Jane Jackson and thank you for listening. If you're a new listener, why not subscribe to this podcast so you're the first to listen to each new episode that'll provide inspiration in your career? Just go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio if you use an Android device and click subscribe. I've also a free Kickstart Your Career audio course that you can find on my Facebook page at facebook.com/JaneCareerCoach. See you there.
Welcome to Jane Jackson Careers, a podcast that takes your career to the next level. Here's your host, Jane Jackson, author of Amazon Careers bestseller, Navigating Career Crossroads.
Welcome back to my careers podcast, where I interview fascinating professionals who've made amazing career changes. Now, today, I'm very lucky to have on the show Daniel Rahman. He is a fashion PR director based in New York. He was born and raised in Singapore, and he left to go to the US to study international relations and marketing in Los Angeles at the University of Southern California. While he was pursuing his degree, he also lived abroad in Paris for a year while working part-time as a marketing intern in the travel division of France Loisir. Daniel first gained experience in event management while working at Aid for AIDS, an LA-based nonprofit organization that ran various fundraisers with celebrity initiatives and food and beverage partnerships. His interest in the nonprofit world led him to Africa, where he spent a summer volunteering as a secondary school teacher in Kigali in Rwanda, teaching business entrepreneurship in French and English. Now, after graduating, Daniel moved to New York and started as a client services coordinator at the art auction house Philippe de Puyry. He's now the PR director at Lux Cartel, a 360-degree fashion incubator he joined in 2012, which helps emerging luxury brands jumpstart their businesses with distribution, communications, creative consulting, and production. What a fascinating man. Now, Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's such a pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to finding out all about this really interesting and varied start to your career and also what you're doing now. So how about, as I always do on my podcast, Daniel, to kickstart, tell me, what were your career aspirations when you were a little boy?
Well, that's a good question. If I'm going to be completely honest, I didn't really give that much thought to what I wanted to be when I grew up. You know, there's obviously when you're a little kid, you always have different things that you aspire to. I loved animals a lot. So I remember vaguely that at one point I wanted to be a vet. After that, I was kind of all over the place. I always wanted to do many different things. I would, you know, be in a play at drama school, and then I decided I wanted to be an actor. And then as I got older and started applying to university, that was the first time that I really started thinking about what I had to do and started sort of narrowing down the fields. So I had this sort of a strong idea in my head that I wanted to be in hotel management and tourism. And that was sort of the thought that shaped most of my teenage years. And then that led to me applying to a bunch of different schools, different universities for different things, mostly for hotel management. Then there was one university that I applied to that didn't offer hotel management, and that was the University of Southern California. And that ended up being the only one that accepted me. And I ended up studying something else and never looked back on that ever since.
Isn't it interesting how things turn around and the best laid plans can change for all sorts of reasons? Now, Daniel, what Absolutely. I want to find out about is you grew up in Singapore and you went to United World College, and you know my daughter and you know all of their friends, and all of you have had such an interesting lifestyle because you would be considered, and would you agree, a third culture kid?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So what I'm really interested in is, you know, having moved around and growing up in a country which is not actually your home country as such, but it feels like it because you spent most of your formative years there, what do you think were your biggest challenges growing up in Singapore?
Well, there were many different challenges at different stages. I think the third culture kid thing that a lot of people talk about, and especially everyone that went to school with us, or anyone that went to an international school and, overseas, is very familiar with that terminology. It becomes challenging in different ways. So it first started with, you know, when I graduated from United World College, or high school, as you would say, I had to do 2 years of military service in Singapore before I was able to start university. And I had virtually grown up, although my mother is from Singapore, my father is German. So I, you know, started going to the German school until I was about 11 or 12. And from there, I switched to an international school. So there was very little socializing with local real Singaporeans. So the first culture shock came when I had to do military service and found myself surrounded by people that were the essence of a country that I grew up in my entire life, but never knew at all. That was definitely the main thing. Then after that, obviously going to international school, you meet so many different children from different walks of life. Everyone gets along well. It's sort of this wonderful bubble where everyone is okay and everyone gets along. In our school, it was a particularly very, very diverse culturally. And it was the whole philosophy of the school was about embracing different cultures. So when I moved to the US for university, I was kind of expecting life to be the same. And when I got there, I realized that it wasn't like that at all. You really, you know, there was a lot more kind of segregation, the way people socialized, they really stuck to their ethnic circles or people of the same cultural background. And that was definitely probably the biggest culture shock that I had.
Yeah, that must have really thrown you for a loop, because being in a melting pot of cultures such as Singapore, where you've got just absolutely every culture under the sun living in harmony and growing up as such, you probably didn't even notice people were from different cultures. People were just right. Individuals as themselves. And so yeah. How did you adapt to this life in LA when it was so different?
Well, for the first part, mostly I did not adapt. So I had really quite lonely my first and second year. And then during my second year, I discovered that there was this study abroad program that I could do in Paris. It was only for a semester. And then I planned out the logistics around it and realized that if you, most of the students didn't really take interest in doing more than a semester, but there were actually enough available courses that I could stick around for the full year. So I decided that logistically it would make much more sense to go away for a full year because, you know, when you grow up, you identify, you know, there are so many people from different walks of life, but we had a lot of Europeans. And so through that and also being German, I identified a lot with German culture and thought, okay, I would fit in Paris perfectly. So I left, I spent my whole entire third year of university in Paris, which I completely loved, fell in love with. I was working there. I had been studying French anyway, my first and second year at university. So it seemed like the perfect transition into mastering the language. And the amazing thing about Paris at that time was that very few, and even in the professional workplace, very few people really spoke English, particularly in mine. So I just kind of threw myself into it and people were very understanding. I loved what I did, went abroad, but then I still had to come back home after that and do my full last year in LA. And strangely, when I came back, even though it was the last thing that I ever wanted to do, the second time around, I came back with fresh eyes and a fresh perspective, and somehow just managed to adapt. I think a lot of it is really about mentality. You just have to kind of, you know, when you get in there and you just really accept that things are not the same and that they're different, you find yourself adapting much more easily. And that, of course, applies to everything, you know, not just moving to different places, but workplace culture, anything.
Mm. And I guess also you're a little bit older, having had an additional 1 or 2 years experience too. So what do you think were the key differences for you being moving from Singapore to LA and then finding yourself in a different culture and struggling to adapt, but then moving to Paris, where again, it's a completely different culture, but somehow it seemed to work for you. What was the difference? Why do you think it worked better?
Well, for me, definitely, I think it was the specifically difficult about LA was that I hadn't even visited my university because I was in military service. I didn't even have the opportunity to visit my university before I started there. So I literally wrapped things up in Singapore and moved to there. My parents actually went to orientation for me. My brother was living there at the time. So that made things a little bit easier. And as far as kind of, you know, having a support system there, but I was completely new to American culture. At school in Singapore, the sort of international school system is very complex. And I guess that part has to be explained. We had an international school, and then there are a bunch of different international schools. There was, you know, there was a German school, there's a British school, there's also an American school. So most of the American students went to the American school. And therefore, that was not really a culture that I was exposed to. And then when you add to that infrastructure of Los Angeles as a city is completely different. You at that time, you were not able, there was no Uber. Nobody took taxis. I literally had to move there. I lived on campus the first year. By the time the second year came around, I had an apartment off campus and I did my American driver's license and got a car and had to learn how to drive around. You get stuck in traffic a lot. There's just, you know, you spend a lot more time in the car and therefore you're less socialized. You're a little bit more lonely. That was kind of the perspective that I had when I was there and why, you know, when I moved to Paris after that, the main reason that everything felt so comfortable and so easy again was that I was able to walk everywhere and you step outside of your apartment and you can find people. If you have a friend and you say, what are you doing in 15 minutes? You could go and meet them for a coffee. That was a little bit different about LA, but I much later, you know, really learned to appreciate all of the amazing things that it had to offer in this place. And I think that's where the whole perspective thing comes in.
Yeah, yeah. And also, because as human beings, we are very adaptable as well. I guess it was a little bit of a shock to the system the first time around. But going back, you knew what you were going back to, and then you could accept and actually be more aware of all the great things that you can do. You hop in the car and you can just drive to the snow, or you can see all the different amazing sights within Southern California too. So tell me, Daniel, moving on, you spent some time in Africa. So tell me about that.
So that kind of started with when I had moved back from Paris to LA. I knew that I wanted to get some work experience on the side. So through some friends, I went to a charity event that was hosted, organized by this nonprofit organization, which I thought called Aid for AIDS, which I thought was really amazing. I thought the event was incredible. It was this fundraiser that they had held in the Orpheum Theater in LA. Kathy Griffin was hosting it. There were a couple of other sort of celebrities in attendance there. I really kind of liked what they were doing. It just seemed like something that would be really fun to do. So I got in touch with the organization afterwards and ended up working for them part-time. And then from there, it was really, I was reading this book a couple months before summer started, and it was called Half the Sky by Nicholas D. Kristof, the New York Times writer, who is incredible. And there was this whole chapter about exposing people to different environments, which I was really relating to. And he really talked about how universities also are the problem as far as, you know, keeping the first world, you know, really segregated from the third world, in that they always offer opportunities, you know, study abroad opportunities in Paris and Rome and Europe. And that really resonated with me because I thought, oh my gosh, he's literally speaking to me. Then I thought, okay, I'm going to look at the back of the resources in this book and look for a volunteer organization and get some experience in Africa. This is the last chance that I'm going to do it. It's the last year before I graduate. Why not do it now? And I just threw myself into it all by myself, which in hindsight was pretty crazy. I always plan things around doing something with a friend. And this was sort of something that just happened really naturally and came quickly. And I didn't give much thought into planning it. And then it was only when I got there that I realized, oh, wow, I'm here by myself for the next 6 weeks.
Mm, and you really threw yourself into it. I mean, how many people get the chance to go to Rwanda, for one thing? But then you were teaching business entrepreneurship in both French and English. So your French really improved very quickly, you know, after your time in Paris. And teaching business entrepreneurship in Rwanda must have been such an interesting time to be able to help your students.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was, I mean, I never saw myself as someone, you know, that was good with children, which was great because I ended up teaching teenagers that were, you know, aged 14 through 18 and above. The whole thing just kind of fell on my lap. It, you know, I went to, you know, you get played through this organization that I volunteered with through, which was called the Global Volunteer Network. They placed me in a school once I got there. People realized that, you know, I had met with the principal. They realized that my French was really good. And they said, you know, I was definitely worried about it because to me it was still, you know, not 100%. But they said, this is perfect. Here is, they sort of gave me a very vague syllabus. And it was entirely up to me to kind of plan lessons. Now, it was just 6 weeks, so I can't say that, you know, you necessarily make the biggest impact while you're there. But it was, you learn things so much more when you teach them. And just teaching things makes you really retain everything a lot more and you really understand things more profoundly. So that was a really interesting experience for me.
So fast forward a few more years and you graduated and then you moved to New York. So another change. So that must have been exciting because, you know, New York is a favorite destination for so many people. And we did catch up just a month ago, Danielle, in New York, which is very, very nice. That was so much fun. So much fun. But so tell me about your move to New York and then how your career progressed after graduation.
So at the end of, as I was starting to approach graduation, I had decided that, you know, even though LA was not as bad as I thought it was, I still sort of had this longing to go back to Paris right away because it was a city that I really fell in love with and I felt that I really culturally connected to it so much. So I was dead set on going back to Europe. However, with most student visas, you get the opportunity after you graduate to live and work in the United States for a year. So I thought to myself, you'd be stupid just to let this opportunity pass. And so I said, okay, why not give New York a shot for a year? You might as well try it. Everyone talks about it. It must be pretty exciting. So I packed my bags, moved there, signed a lease for an apartment for a year, which is exactly what I needed, not more, not less. as with many other people that live here. I fell in love with it and haven't left ever since.
There's something about New York, isn't there? That it's just, I mean, there's such a buzz, it's exciting. There are so many beautiful places to go to and see, and, you know, there are just people everywhere. But so now you've had such an interesting career, you know, as a young man, you've had an amazing career because now you're the PR director at Lux Cartel. So let's hear that story, because you've done so many different things in your current role to reach where you are now.
It's strangely also essentially the first real job that I had. So I started, after I moved to New York, I looking for different jobs, two opportunities that fell on my lap at the same time. I had met someone on one of my night outs that was working for this auction house called Philip Sapiri and Company, and said, you know, if you know, she was kind of asking me what I wanted to do. And I said, I want to do this, I want to do that. I was always the person who couldn't make up my mind. And I was saying, you know, fashion, art, luxury. I had studied art history in Paris, but also I really had a strong interest in luxury brand management. And she said, you know, they definitely have a position available if you want to start in their client services department. So that happened. I was very quickly hired, and at the same time had found this opportunity work in the sales department of Lux Cartel, which was a very new agency. It was just run by the two partners. I was sort of the first employee to kind of join the team at the freelance basis. So I was juggling two jobs at a time and working 7 days a week. Don't ask me how I did it. I was young and in New York, and I guess the rush of meeting all these ambitious people, you also kind of feel like you have to keep up with them. Both of those were really interesting in their own ways, but ultimately I ended up sort of seeing a more long-term sustainable future with a growing agency that had the opportunity to kind of branch out into so many different things. And I ultimately transitioned into that full time.
Yeah. And now as PR director at Lux Cartel, your role sounds fascinating, because you go into all these different areas, you know, creative consulting, production, logistics, and obviously everything to do with PR. What do you really enjoy about your role now?
I love that I get to, what I love about my role definitely first and foremost is that I get to do so many different things. I've worn so many different hats at the company since I started working there 7 years ago. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I started and I liked. And then after a while, that kind of tapered off. And I realized that I didn't like that. And my strength was more, you know, in doing something else. So I really got the opportunity to kind of make mistakes and learn from them and learn what I was good at and what I wasn't. That's definitely been the most valuable experience that I've had. And what I love about it now is the fact that because I've had experience doing so many different things, I get to strategize an idea from the beginning and oversee the entire process from the beginning to the end, to the creative process, working with the clients. You really get to see everything from start to finish, which in sort of larger, much more structured companies, it's so much about specialization, and you really have to do one specific thing. And that's something that I'm very thankful that I don't have to do.
Yeah, it sounds like you really enjoy the variety as well. And working within a fashion PR environment, it's really fast paced, and there's just, so, you know, all the brands and the labels, and it just, there's so much going on all the time. It must be really rewarding. But, you know, the lesson learned here is that really for so many high school students or people graduating from university is that, you know, if you don't have a plan, don't worry, but just be right. Just be open to opportunities, and then leverage your skills and always be learning. Because you everything that you did, you know, you were learning, and then you learned a new language. You became so good at that language that you could even teach in that language, which I find is absolutely amazing. Because for me to learn a new language is much, much harder. Okay, you seem to absorb it, but maybe it's because you do have, you know, an international background as well. And then now in your role, moving forward, what do you hope to achieve, Daniel, in the next, say, 5 years or so?
Good question. Definitely, there's so many different things that I mean, for me, I think what the thing that I've learned really that the most important thing that you should always plan is to always keep learning and to keep questioning yourself if you know what you're doing is something that you enjoy. Not just that, but also, are you really making the best of every opportunity? If there's a job that you're doing, and you're not necessarily happy with it, are you doing everything that's in your power to change things to make them work for you? That to me is the main goal. I think that there, for many years, as I was trying to, you know, figure out what I want to do, and when I had first graduated and I was looking at, you know, jobs and all the different job websites, I would always look at other people and other, you know, peers of mine and be incredibly jealous because they knew very specifically what they wanted. They wanted to be a singer. They wanted to be a marketing executive. They wanted to be this. And they were all very specific roles. They wanted to be lawyers or doctors. You know, when you have those very specific goals, it's very, there is the advantage, of course, that you can set the steps and lay out the goals and everything that it takes to sort of work towards that. But if there's anything I've learned is that there's not really a right or wrong way to a successful or happy career. I think that you can, for me, I say never, I always say to myself, never say never. I see myself working in different industries in the future. I'm not necessarily married to one specific one. I love what I'm doing right now. I'll do it as long as I'm enjoying it. But the most important thing is to make sure that you are always learning and that you know that you're always making use of all of your talents and all of your skills.
Wise words, Daniel. I like two main sound bites that I got from you. Always keep learning, because that's so valuable. And also, never say never, because we never know.
Right?
Exactly what opportunities will come up. You've had such a great journey from Singapore to LA to Paris to Rwanda to New York. It's really an interesting journey, isn't it?
It is. It definitely is very reflective of the kind of personality that I am, which is always very all over the place and someone who wants to do, who wants to always try everything and never focus on one thing.
Well, I wouldn't say all over the place. I would call you a bit of an adventurer, Daniel. Okay.
That adventurous spirit. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. And I just need to tell people where they can find you if they want to find out a little bit more about what it's like to be a third culture kid, what it's like to make the brave move to move countries or move cities many times. So where can people find you, Daniel?
People can find me on LinkedIn, and my Twitter and Instagram hashtag is Daniel Rahman.
Okay, and I will have these links on my show notes on janejacksoncoach.com as well, so people can listen to you again, or else reach out to you and say hello and pick your brains on fashion PR or third culture kids or, you know, moving country or all these different things that you've had an amazing life in your 30 years, Daniel. So I thank you so much for your time. It's been really good chatting to you, and really good to have met you last month in Greenwich Village in New York. That was really fun.
And I look forward to the next trip that you make over here.
Yes, I'll definitely descend on you. Okay, well, thank you so much, Daniel. I will talk to you again very soon. Take care.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
It was. Bye, Daniel. If you'd like to find out how coaching can help you, visit janejacksoncoach.com, where not only will you be able to listen to other fascinating interviews from professionals who've made amazing career changes, you'll also be able to download some free ebooks and guides on how to manage your career effectively.
You've been listening to Jane Jackson Careers. Sign up to receive regular career advice at janejacksoncoach.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my Career Success Program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.